You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Harry's. It's for guys like you and me, frankly, who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the coupon code Majority Report when you check out.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, July 25th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, it's Casual Friday, folks. Cliff Schechter will be joining us after a brief vacation on his part. Also on the program today, to give me a movie recommendation that ostensibly I will watch, but I probably won't have the time. Yeah. Matthew Film Guy will be here. Perhaps you can take him up on his movie recommendation. Also on the program today, more from the conflict in Israel and Palestine. Tens of thousands of Palestinians marched last night in what could be the beginning of the third intifada. Meanwhile, well, I'll get to that in a moment. Also, Paul Ryan releases his poverty plan. Shorter version, you've got to make a promise not to be poor, and then you won't be poor.
Making money's a good idea.
Yes, you need to pledge to make more money, and then you won't be poor.
You have a cash flow problem.
We'll get to that story. Senator John Walsh plagiarizing.
He's not the only one.
And he's not the only one. Apparently, what do you do when you have to file that daily, I don't know, 200-word report? Well, you plagiarize 100 of those words from Yahoo Answers.
31 Disney cartoons that perfectly describe the situation in Gaza.
There you go. Also on the program today, President Obama meeting with Honduran officials to possibly set up an asylum plan based in Honduras. People still talking about that Halbig case regarding the question as to whether or not subsidies are available to people who buy insurance on exchanges established by the federal government as opposed to states. All that and more. Starting off, we should just say, I've only seen this on Twitter at this point, but from a fairly reliable source, that the chief of police in the West Bank is saying that the two suspects that they have apprehended in the killing of those and kidnapping of those three Israeli teenagers come from a cell that is unaffiliated with Hamas. Well, Michael says, of course, but there's every reason to believe that the Israelis have known this for some time. They certainly could not have had evidence that it was Hamas because it was not Hamas. So one, two, three, four. What are we fighting for, I guess? All right, and let's move on to this story before we get to Cliffy. Satellite show, major Southwest groundwater loss. I wouldn't worry about it. We'll just get a different ground. Groundwater losses from the Colorado River Basin appears massive enough to challenge long-term water supplies for the seven states and parts of Mexico that it serves. This is according to a new study released by Thursday using NASA satellites. Researchers from NASA and the University of California, Irvine. Well, let's be honest. This is just some type of cottage industry set up to make us worry about things like global climate change. It is the first to quantify how much groundwater people in the West are using during the region's current drought. Ah, come on. Stephanie Castle, probably Al Gore's cousin, the study's lead author and a water resource specialist at the University of California, Irvine, called the extent of groundwater depletion shocking. We didn't realize the magnitude of how much water we actually depleted. Since 2004, researchers said, the Colorado River Basin, the largest in Southwest, has lost 53 million acre feet, or 17 trillion gallons of water. That's enough to supply more than 50 million households for a year, or nearly fill Lake Mead. It's the nation's largest water reservoir. Twice. Three-fourths of those losses were groundwater, and unlike reservoirs and above-ground water, groundwater sources can become so depleted that they may never refill. Nah, I wouldn't worry about this stuff. Who needs water? I mean, they just ask the people in Detroit. Apparently, you don't need any water whatsoever. And on another note, apparently PETA offered to pay all the water bills of people in Detroit if they promise to go vegan.
Jeez. Unbelievable. Because they could afford to do that.
I suppose people can make any type of offer they want to make and put any strings on it. But really? Do you really? I mean.
Just a blind.
It just seems to be a little bit, I don't know, whoever the communications director at PETA is, I think probably should be thinking about maybe another line of work because it's rather offensive. Let's leverage the terrible poverty and the deprivation of people suffering, unable to take a crap in their toilet, to take a shower, to brush their teeth, to wash their clothes. Take a shower, did I say that?
Yes, but some people shower twice a day.
There you go. And let's leverage that to force these people into not eating meat, and perhaps I guess they would go down to the local bodega, get some seitan or something like that for their protein or... I don't know.
It's not cheap being vegan.
No, it is not.
So if you can't afford your water utility bill, you likely can't afford to be vegan.
Well, who knows? I mean, I don't know whether or not, but it just seems a little bit misplaced.
This is the very premise is, it's incredibly tacky and callous.
With that said, we are going to...
eat hamburgers? And-
no, we're going to we're going to offer to pay people's... water bills in Detroit if they agree to listen to the Majority Report every day.
That's right.
That's what we'll do. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, Cliff Schechter.
Exit wound in a foreign nation.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Harry's.
Look, it's no secret.
I'm not a big fan of shaving.
All right, I don't like
to shell out all those fancy shavers and those big plastic things that you need some type of.
You need to be like a safety cracker to get those things out.
They cost four bucks for a razor,
and then you hook you in. You got tons of cash to get new razors.
Harry's is a company that has basically taken this horrible experience of buying overpriced shavers and they've turned it on its head.
I no longer am buying those cheap disposable razors.
Harry's was founded by two guys, one of whom was the co-founder of Warber Parker.
The guys who make the glasses, and I'm wearing a pair of those right now.
So I figured I'd give it a try.
It's basically all about less is more with Harry's.
You get a great shaving gel to go with it.
Simply go over to harrys.com and use the coupon code Majority Report to get five bucks off your first purchase.
That's harrys.com promo code Majority Report.
I got the Winston set and I got it engraved so that Nikki doesn't use it.
Shipped to my door.
I like the look of it.
I like the feel of it and it gives me a great shave.
Check it out.
Thank Harry's for their support of the Majority Report.
That's
harrys.com promo code Majority Report.
My apartment looks upside down from there. Water spiraled the wrong way out the sink. And her voice is a backwards record. It's like a whirlpool and it never ends. And her anger and I are getting old and we still haven't walked in the glow of each other's majestic presence. Listen and hear my words to the ones you would think I would say if there wasn't me for you. All alone at the 64 World's Fair, 80 dolls yelling small girl after all. Who was at the DuPont Pavilion? Why was the bench still warm? Who had been there? Or the time when the storm tangled up the wire to the horn on the pole at the bus depot? And in back of the edge of hearing, these are the words that the voice was repeating. In the glow of each other's majestic presence. Listen and hear my words. They're the ones you would think I would say if there wasn't me for you. When I was driving once I saw this.
We are back. Sam Cedar, the Majority Report on the phone. It is Casual Friday, and what better way to celebrate than having Cliff Schechter on the show? And what better way to celebrate having Cliff Schechter on the show than playing the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Sammy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Recovered from Netroots. Missed you there. I know you couldn't attend this year.
Yes.
And but I have more or less recovered, although still sort of dragging, I think, from those 6 hour on the radio days or 5 hours or whatever it was.
No, I mean, those were some serious days. And then you, luckily for you, right when you finished those days, you had more radio on the weekend.
That's it. That's exactly right. Nothing like
you should have. Sorry, go ahead.
No, nothing like having three shows. But the good news is one of them was completely pro bono, so it didn't feel like I was actually working. It felt more like that was my that was totally my hobby. So,
well, that's good. You should have really just, you know, attached some form of communication to your head and walked around and maybe turned your life Some sort of a reality TV show. Maybe you should have become like a reality radio show.
Well, the good news is I got credit for an annex learning course I'm doing for an internship on communications. So that was the upside. So Cliff,
did you get that credit that you missed out on so that you never graduated from college?
No, this is I'm trying to slowly work my way back into law school. I've got a submission at BU to see if they'll accept. My internship as a credit towards a law degree.
Communication law, yeah. Certainly. It's important.
Now, Cliff, let's engage in a little counter-programming, shall we? Because
sure.
This week has been dominated by some, obviously,
pretty
some very big
stuff.
Stories. The massive violence in Palestine and Israel, and the downing of a jet in Ukraine, and we're still in the shadow of this. We're talking about this immigration stuff, but one thing that I did not
we learned once again that we're really, really bad at executing people.
Yes, indeed.
We may need tips from the Chinese or Iran or somewhere because we really suck at it.
Yeah, we're not good at it. Although to our credit, we're still trying,
right.
As opposed to every other sort of Western
civilized
Western
country.
So we are still.
I go with post 19th century thinking. But okay,
right.
Yeah,
we're still trying our best to kill people.
And someday we will find that right formula, that just the right cocktail,
right,
just
indeed.
The right mix. Yeah,
indeed. All right. Well, listen, let's do a little counter programming here. I want to start in Georgia because, you know, we are now nearly in August. In September, things are really going to start to heat up. People are going to start to really pay attention to these elections. And we just to the extent that there was any chance ever, I think it was in Montana, Senator John Walsh has was caught in a plagiarism scandal that he apparently there's a lot of things sort of shocking about this. You only need to do a 14-page thesis to get your master's from the War College, which is
you can sort of do in a night.
I think like literally, I think I would be surprised if my daughter gets out of junior high without writing a 14-page paper. But be that as it may, what was also sort of shocking about it is that the senator apparently didn't write a large chunk of it, that he simply found it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And
I hear they frown upon that in school.
Yes.
And really in general in life, taking other people's work is generally not. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, do you even know what is going to happen there? I suppose it's too late to dump him and get the other guy.
No, no, it is, you know, he's a sitting senator. And I guess theoretically he could.
Well, I don't mean dump him as a senator, but I meant, you know, running for re-election.
Yeah, I mean,
run for the seat.
I think it's too late.
Yeah.
And you know, he was an unlikely win there for the Democrats anyways. What's interesting, though, is that, you know, I mean, I guess the voters will decide. You know, we Rand Paul certainly did this, it seems, far more recently. And, you know, take it for what it's worth. John Walsh, you know, claims that he was suffering from PTSD at the time PTSD, I should say. And, you know, undoubtedly you come back from Iraq, there may be issues that, you know, you're faced with having to. Maybe write 14 pages is actually something that genuinely could be difficult. But be that as it may, you know, Rand Paul obviously caught in a couple of plagiarism scandals. Nobody seems to even talk about it anymore. Our sitting vice president.
Well, it's easier, though, when you belong to a party that at this point doesn't really have what you would call much sort of intellectual heft.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, though, our vice president, you know, had to drop out of a race. Well, I guess it was 25 years ago.
That's right, 88, when he ran for president.
So, but nevertheless, this is not going to help him unless, I mean, I don't know how it's being covered there. But what would be interesting is if more people realize that he was a vet and somehow that swung voters in Montana. Stranger things have happened. But all right,
yeah.
So that's unlikely. But Georgia. Let's move to Georgia here, because I think Georgia and North Carolina could be the big sort of sleeper stories. Tell us what's been going on in Georgia.
Well, you know, in sort of shades of Eric Cantor's loss in the primary, where everyone thought one polling firm had him up by 35 points. Pretty much every poll, I mean, let's get back. Let me take a step back. There was a large primary of crazy people, also known as the Georgia Republican House Caucus, mostly all these House members were running for the seat, and some other people, the crazy woman from who got Komen in so much trouble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had the top two, but neither of them got the required percent. I think it was 50%, right? It wasn't 40 like in some places. So the final two guys were Jack Kingston, who's a congressman, and David Perdue, who's cousin of the former governor, Sonny Perdue, was the CEO, I think, of Reebok at one point. It's worth a ton of money. But he's sort of a first-time candidate, and he's already kind of proven that because he said a couple goofy things along the way that can be used against him. And what ended up happening is that he lost by 50.9 to 49.1. Jack Kingston lost, and that was the guy who they wanted because he was sort of the genial guy who smiles when he says right-wing crazy things and seemed to have the most appeal. The Chamber of Commerce, which is interesting considering that David Perdue was a CEO, hated him because he's actually mentioned raising taxes, which you don't do that in front of the chamber, man. And so they supported Kingston, and polls are showing that Kingston was going to win, and he did not win. And I would say, you know, I haven't seen Michelle Nunn on the Democratic side, who obviously has a very famous family name, which helps. Her dad, Sam Nunn, having been a longtime senator. But I don't think she's been a particularly inspiring candidate. Why don't I just leave it at that? So I think it's going to improve Democratic chances. I'm not saying I necessarily would bet on the Democrats there, but I think it certainly puts it more into play because I don't think he is all that terrific a candidate from what I've seen so far.
What was interesting, I mean, you know, and I think in the, I don't know if we mentioned this in the past, but not only did Elizabeth Warren campaign for Allison Grimes in Kentucky, she went to West Virginia as well and was warmly received. And her message of economic populism really resonated in both those red states. And what's interesting is that Perdue took a bit of a beating from a lot of people there. And he was painted as you recall that in February or March, maybe it was March, April of the 2012 GOP primary. Newt Gingrich got a bunch of money from Sheldon Adelson, poured it into a documentary, like a 30-minute documentary, basically attacking Mitt Romney as a one percenter and a vulture capitalist, I think he called him.
And
that is what they tried to do with Perdue. He's eked by. But I guess the real question is
Well, they turned that up to 11, so to speak, for the general, because that was the thing, is that really what Newt Gingrich did is he sort of set the tone and basically set it up for Democrats to jump on top of that message and amplify it.
And wasn't it Georgia that Gingrich that Romney did very poorly in Georgia? I mean, I think it was leading up to the Georgia primary. I don't know if Gingrich actually won that primary. I can't remember, but it was around that time. And I just wonder if
Georgia and Georgia has some of those same issues. I mean, it's a state that's growing. You know, it's got this sort of new economy around Atlanta and some other, you know, smaller urban centers, but the rural areas have been hit hard, and there's no doubt that populism could play there.
And I would also say that African Americans make up 30% of the population in Georgia.
Right.
And we have seen now, look, let's also preface this. We're going to be talking about how bad Nunn is a year from today if she's elected. We're going to be bemoaning the fact that she is standing in the way of legislation that we like. She's going to vote with Democrats, you know, who knows, 20-30% of the time. The point is she's going to vote for Harry Reid to be Senate Majority Leader. That's the difference.
And she's come out, you know, she's for gay marriage. She's very pro-choice. She's, you know, and really straightforward on all sorts of women's issues of pay equity and other. I mean, there are a number of things, and there's no doubt she'll drive us crazy on a number of things too. But right now we are talking about holding on to the Senate too.
So right.
It's not the luxury of, well, we have 57 or 56 seats. You know, it's, we could lose the Senate, and then this circus we've seen from the House is going to be extended to the Senate for the next 2 years.
Right. I mean, then we're going to have to spend all our time talking about impeachment, which I'm not convinced that we won't anyways. But it really makes a difference when it comes to judicial appointments, frankly, and to confirmation of executive agencies. So you've got these Moral Monday movement that was obviously is huge in North Carolina, but Georgia has had their own as well.
That's correct. And
this is what's going to be interesting. You know, we keep hearing over and over again that the issue for Democrats in these off-year elections is turnout. And yet, in these two states, we have a what appears to be at least a very, very motivated population that is also not. I don't know if it constitutes all of the Democratic base, but certainly a large percentage. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the irony of it all is that her name recognition helps her a lot because of her last name. But in a way, it may be the biggest albatross around her neck, too, because her dad, you know, Sam Nunn, was literally one of the original founders of the DLC. I mean, he was as DLC as DLC gets. You know, will he and the people that used to be around him be advising her to swear off populism, you know, and run as a moderate, right? So, I mean, what a moderate is in D.C., which essentially means being a neoliberal. And if she does that, then you'll see a lot of that excitement die. And so far, I haven't seen her push populist themes a lot, so I'm hoping she will. If she's smart enough to jump on that, as you just said, with what's going on with Moral Mondays, with what's going on in the state in general, the fact that this guy, they've already set the table for with what they've done to him, and he is going to be easy because of some of the dumb things he says, kind of like Mitt Romney. He's done a few of those already.
And he's also
to be out of touch.
His business, if I'm not mistaken, he had a business that he shut down. I mean, it's another story of outsourcing jobs.
That's right.
Kingston attacked Purdue for his experience at Pillow Techs. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a company that makes like a really good pillow. I don't know. But it eliminated 7,000 jobs several months after Purdue took charge of the company. So I mean, maybe we don't. You know, I guess we'll have to see if that theme resonates. But let's move north, shall we? Along the Atlantic coast, and talk about another governor who hopefully will never be president. And I'm not just talking about...
I wouldn't be all that upset if he wasn't governor for that much longer either.
Indeed. We're talking about...
About son of Cuomo.
Yes, the Cuomo the Lesser. And right.
Ever noticed, I mean, we may have even had this conversation before on the show, but... That maybe we should have some law against sort of the next generation being allowed to run for office if you're in office because they never get better than the ones that came before them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible. I don't know how you would codify that.
I don't know either, but I'm just throwing out an idea. I'm spitballing.
Yeah, I mean, look, because Evan Bayh, we would have never had to deal with Evan Bayh.
From Prescott to George H.W. to George W. Bush is a serious, like, you'd be looking at the backwards ladder of evolution as we turn back into monkeys.
Oh, Rand Paul, we would not have either. Huh?
That we wouldn't have Rand Paul. And I'm just saying, like, seriously, the next generation is always worse. I mean, frankly, even the pre-2000 Al Gore, who was much more the moderate, you know, cautious, whatever, versus his dad, who lost his seat over standing up against Vietnam, as did Birch Bayh, as you mentioned, who had Evan Bayh. I mean, you can find this in the Democratic Party. You can also find it in the Republican Party, where the sons of some of the more moderate Republicans turn into right-wing.
Mitt Romney?
Yes, that would be an example, for example. I'm just saying, okay, we can get back to the point at hand, but, you know, kids of politicians, it doesn't turn out well.
Now, do you know how many days it's been since Andrew Cuomo has made a public appearance?
I don't know that figure, but I bet you're going to tell me.
It has been 5 days. Now, I don't know if he is hiking a trail in the Appalachian Mountains or...
He's not a romantic like
that. He's not a romantic like that. And the reason...
He may have gotten a room at the C Street house, and he may be hanging out there. That's another possibility.
This is indicative of just how much trouble he feels he is in terms of this big report that came out by the New York Times. I mean, it is massive. But it is essentially centered around the Moreland Commission, and I've talked about this in the past. But he set this commission up in 2013. It was supposed to go 18 months long. It was supposed to deal with corruption in New York state politics, which, you know, there's plenty of. 18 months, probably not a long enough time. But he shut it down after about 8 or 9 months. Saying that the commission's done with its business.
Yeah, they've done their work. You know, we're done.
And
that kind of thing.
Now, the statutory framework of this commission is ambiguous. But the issue is that Cuomo clearly told the commission not to pursue, or his administration, I should say, not to pursue anybody who was any way involved with him or his friends in multiple occasions, it seems.
They had so many excuses. They're like, well, this was just set up to look at the legislative branch. And then they were like, well, we're looking at the guys who did the TV ad buy for you. So that, you know, I mean, and then they'd have to make up another thing. Oh, well, no, you know, we're not looking at consultants. The thing is, they kept finding the excuses for why these guys couldn't look into anything with a connection to Cuomo. Does this not seriously, like, pretending to be the anti-corruption guy, being the fiscally sound guy and all this stuff, is this not just completely a ring of the same exact thing of the other guy across the Hudson with a slightly bigger waistline?
Indeed.
These two guys should share a cell together somewhere.
I think there's a good question as to whether or not you could have a tri-state area penitentiary where it's just a governor's wing.
And in Connecticut, really, pretty much every other governor goes to prison. So,
this story gets very interesting because there's a lot of different things at play here. Now, let's assume for a moment that this is not a this is actually not a legal issue for him. And I got to say, the Southern District of Manhattan, the U.S. attorney there, Preet Bharara, seems intent on pursuing this. There's grand juries. But what's clear, really clear, is that Cuomo feels there's some potential political damage here. And
a good sign for why he's been hiding out for over 100 hours.
And what's happening, though, is interesting because Rob Astorino, who is the Republican. Now, remember, Zephyr Teachout is running against Cuomo in the Democratic primary. So she is out there pushing this, and she could not be a better spokesperson.
Her whole thing has been, since the beginning, one of her whole things has been campaign finance reform and anti-corruption.
Yes.
So this is right in her wheelhouse, too, to hit him over. Let's just say this is an interesting aside. You know, and I'm sure you're in the same position as me, Sam. I have a lot of friends who are, involved in the Working Families Party and some of the other groups in New York that made that deal with Cuomo, on what he would deliver on, which really they extracted a lot from him for their endorsement. But I do have to wonder if they're sitting there, right now saying perhaps that wasn't the best idea.
Yeah, I'm actually very curious about that as well. Now, they have the ability, I think, and certainly they have in the past. I think in 2010 they did this. They endorsed someone else and then pulled that endorsement and ended up endorsing Cuomo in the end. I gotta feel like they're sitting there going, I wonder if we made a mistake here. But set that aside for a moment.
Yeah.
Astorino apparently had a conflict with Chris Christie. Chris Christie is the Republican Governors Association head. He's supposed to go around and raise money for Republican candidates for the governor's office.
But he seems to have what you would call a non-aggression pact with Cuomo.
Yes.
I won't mess with you. You don't mess with me. Because let's face it, sadly, a lot of the same people are funding both of them.
True.
And so they seem to have – so Christie has found his way to skip New York and go to Connecticut and other places to do these fundraisers. And man, did Astorino open up a can of whoop ass on him, which maybe you've got that quote in front of you. I don't have it,
but he laid into him. But I mean,
on the bridge gate.
That's the point. Okay, look, I can understand why. I understand that they have the same funders, right? Ken Langone and the hedge funders and probably big real estate, et cetera, et cetera. But it really does not make sense as to why Chris Christie would not be raising money to challenge Governor Cuomo unless Governor Cuomo had something that he could really punish Chris Christie with. Now, we know that story about how Chris Christie called Cuomo in the early days of the bridge scandal being revealed, basically saying, tell your guy on the other side of the bridge, the other side of the Port Authority, not to be so aggressive in looking for why we shut down that bridge. And one wonders what information each other has on each other to create this dynamic. I mean, it is not common. I mean, it's one thing for two senators who come from the same state back in the day when one was a Republican and one was a Democrat to sort of like professional courtesy, I'm not going to come out and campaign hard against you.
Right.
But a governor from another state who is the head of the RGA not raising money for another governor candidate, that's strange.
It's more than strange. I mean, he literally is not doing his job. It would be like the one of the Senator House committees not spending money on an incumbent, which is what their reason is for existence, to protect incumbents first and obviously try to gain a majority next. I mean, the reason for the existence of the governors' associations are to get your governors elected, to raise money for all your guys. Now, there's some that you may think of a better chance than others, and there's some you spend more time raising money for others, but you don't snub people. And I have to agree with you. I think that it's a non-aggression pact probably built in a number of things, but my guess is, you know, one of the big ones might just be that there are things that Cuomo knows that Christie would rather Cuomo not speak about.
Right, indeed. And
but you know what, being that they do have the same funders and probably some of the same consultants, I bet that would be an easy one to look up in 2 seconds. Who knows if Christie may know some things about Cuomo and the right. Moreland Commission that just came out. I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, you know, we need to get Francis Ford Coppola in here to make a movie to sort this whole thing out.
No kidding. So, it you know, we'll see if Zephyr Teachout can make gain some ground off.
I think you're going to see her do that. I mean, I think now, inevitably she'll gain some ground. His numbers will go down somewhat. You know, and I think it's going to depend a lot on how much worse this gets. I mean, can he run out the clock? Maybe he can before it gets bad enough, because he's so far ahead of Astorino right now. But I mean, you know, we've seen crazier things. I mean, when in polling and then in these kinds of numbers, when something reaches a tipping point and there's a huge change, you can see a wave of support go from one person to another like that. You know, and so I wouldn't count anything out at this point. I mean, if another shoe or let's say an entire foot or a leg, maybe floating around the Hudson, drops on Cuomo. You know, who knows, man?
Now, before I get an IM saying, hey, she's got no chance and whatnot, there's two things that I think are really clear here. One, Cuomo's not making any public appearances, which is, after 5 days, it's sort of crazy in a way.
I would want the person, I'll say this quickly, I would want the people here to speak up. You know, you get an IM saying she has no chance. I would want the people here who are fully confident that Bill de Blasio had a chance, the slightest chance,
right,
a year out from that election, of not only winning his primary in a huge way, but winning with 70%+ of the vote.
If
you are out there and you predicted that, then you have a right to tell us whatever you want right now. Otherwise, I could give you 20 other cases like that where somebody was so far out as to be basically ignored. There was a candidate named Hillary in 2008. Nobody could beat her either. Party primaries are funny things. When a wave starts going and somebody catches it, and it could be due to corruption or other factors, but don't count anybody out.
This definitely expands the playing field, as it were, I mean, in terms of who would be attracted to teach out a candidacy because of the corruption. You know, it's not just about ideology, it's about good government. But here's one
you
more.
I'll say quickly, you need to look at, because, yes, Cuomo's still by far the favorite, so don't get me the wrong way, but you need to start looking at, not only if other stuff comes out, but if people start backing away from Cuomo, not wanting to be publicly seen with him, rescinding endorsements, things of that nature. If those kinds of things start happening, then I would start really paying attention.
And there's one other indicator, that apparently there has been protesters following Zephyr Teachout. Not many, like 10, 15, a squad, it seems. And they seem to be showing up at a lot of her campaign functions. And they hold signs sort of claiming that she's not from New York State because she had moved to Vermont. She hadn't set up her residency, according to them. You know, like sort of almost like LaRouche-ite type of things, right? I mean, because this has been adjudicated. And who hangs on to that stuff? You know, the idea of carpetbagging, this isn't, you know, this isn't 1943. This is, you know, 1937 or, you know, 1925, where it's like, he's a carpetbagger. Yeah, you know, New York is so fundamentally different from Vermont that we don't.
We have
Senator Hillary Clinton. She didn't grow up in New York.
Right.
You know, I mean,
this happens all the time. I mean, we're at a point now. Exactly. It's not like it used to be, where people generally stayed in the region they were from. We didn't have these things called airplanes. I would say
right,
that
in New York, of all places, too, it's not like, you know, I mean, there's a lot of native New Yorkers, but it's, you know, there's also New York is one of those cities in the country where a lot of people come from another place. But here's the interesting
thing. I would say just quickly, the only exception to that is if it's a case like Scott Brown, where you've lost in one place
right, yes,
and you're just shopping for a place to
right,
run.
Right.
But. Yeah,
right.
But otherwise,
I mean, she's clearly living here, and she was not like, "Hi, just last week I ran in Connecticut, so I'm going to move to New York."
Exactly.
But here's the thing. This is what's so interesting about this. So, the guys Hunter Walker and Colin Campbell, and they're from, I think, what's the name of their outfit? Business. I can't remember where they write for. But
who'd you say? I'm sorry.
Business Week, is it? I think maybe it's Business Week. Business Insider. And so they followed. None of these protesters would speak with reporters. Now, that's weird, because when you go to protest a candidate or anything, what you're trying to do is to talk, to get reporters to talk to you. Right. That's what they were.
Right.
None of them would talk. And they all covered their faces with their posters when people were trying to take pictures of the protesters.
Because they don't want you to see, like, kind of like the Brooks Brothers riot down.
Well,
in,
they're all
Florida. You'll
dressed
like,
in
take
like
a picture of one guy. Like, hey, that's Cuomo's aide from when he was at HUD. And another guy. I mean, it's so funny.
Right. Right. I mean, well, it turns out that these protesters, all dressed in Business Friday casual attire. one of them on the subway was seen.
You have to have your Brooks Brothers if you're going to be in a Brooks Brothers.
To have an ID for SL Green Realty. Now, this is relevant for two reasons in our conversation. One, Stephen Green of SL Green Realty, which is one of the largest commercial real estate enterprises in New York City. I mean, I think at one point capitalization was something like over $1 billion. Still may very well be. In fact, probably is even bigger than that.
Right.
He is one of Cuomo's top 10 corporate campaign donors. And these guys at Inside Business, Business Insider, have the idea that this guy, these kids, essentially, one was a college student because they followed him back to NYU, and then the guy cursed them out. Are
that's what's so amazing about these things.
For
they're
Stephen
so lazy
Green.
That they can't find kids a couple degrees removed from, you know what I mean? They got to bring somebody with the name of his dad, who's, I mean.
Well, no. It's not him. They have IDs from Stephen Green.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That they're interns at entry level Well, workers at Stephen Green Enterprises. Now, the interesting thing, too, from my perspective, is I know Stephen Green. I met
Stephen
Green.
You do, don't
you?
You have this sort of strange history with him and some family members of his.
He was a former owner of Air America. Now, he was in absentia. He basically had given Mark Green the money.
Which worked out very well.
Yes, it worked out great because Mark Green pretended like his brother was going to give him more money. And then the morons who were in charge of Air America at that time said, we didn't need that much anyways. And they were both lying. And, of course, that's when that rendition of there seems to be a habit, as far as I can tell, in the radio industry of saying, oh, sure, that's not going to be a problem. We've got that funded. No worries.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, Stephen Green tied into this sort of the neoliberal side of the big money side of Democratic politics. And in fact, in New York City, even de Blasio is heavily tied into the real estate industry. This is where all the big money is.
Sure.
So it's going to be interesting to go and see. There are two projects I want to engage in right now. And one is I would like to spend my days following those kids to find out who they are.
Why don't you show up at a couple of rallies?
Well, that's the thing.
Engage them with microphone in hand.
Maybe. And then the other thing I would like to do is go to Maine and get Susan Collins and Angus King to comment on the fact that their state's governor was meeting with sovereign citizens on a regular basis. And those are my two sort of like tracker projects. Maybe we'll do a fundraiser on this show so that I can take 3 weeks off to do that.
Has Angus King not denounced it?
My understanding is that neither one of them has said a word.
Because that surprises me. Because, he's an independent. I would have thought he has no hold. The Republican Party has no hold on him. So that is very strange.
Very strange.
The only thing that tells me is he really is considering if the Republicans win switching to the Republican caucus, which
he said he has not ruled it out. And so it remains to be seen whether that will be the case. But
well, these are two good projects, Sam.
Thank you, Cliff. I wanted to talk about the Paul Ryan budget, but I guess we're going to have to do that another time. I already said
that. Sadly, we can't talk about Israel and Gaza because I find that unites people on the left like nothing else.
Yes, indeed.
It makes me friends. It gets me nice comments sent to me. I really enjoy talking about that.
Right.
Issue.
No controversy there.
Right. So, oops, we ran out of time. Yeah. Next time.
All right. Well, Cliff Schechter, as always, a pleasure. We will talk to you hopefully next week.
That sounds like a plan. Have a great week, guys.
All right. You too. All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Matthew Film Guy, who will give us a film recommendation. Back in just a moment. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder, Majority Report, Casual Friday. Time to get a movie recommendation for the weekend. And we've got Matthew Film Guy, but first, this little ditty. Wow, I didn't realize how much that trailed off there. Matthew Film Guy, how are you?
Hello,
Matthew?
Sam. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know that I'm great.
Yeah, you must be pretty tired.
Why do you say that?
You're spreading yourself pretty thin these days, I hear.
Well, no, now I'm starting to congeal, so I'm not quite as
are you? Okay.
Spread so thin.
Okay.
Now,
I'm about 30 days behind on the show, so I'm responding to what you were doing about that long ago.
Okay, well, that makes sense then. Now, where are you? You sound like you're in a construction site.
Oh, sorry, that's my air conditioner. Let me kill it. Boom.
All right, tell me if you start sweating. I mean, that's the way we do the show here, so there's no reason for our guests to be any more comfortable. Matthew, what are you up to? Are you married yet?
No, I'm not married. I'm engaged.
You're engaged? When do you intend to get married?
So I'm working on this show called Teacher's Lounge. It's a web show.
Wait a second. Whoa. Hey, buddy, you know, I don't know. You obviously don't want to talk about it. Why? Did your fiance just walk in or something?
No.
All right.
I must have misheard the question. I'm sorry. What did you want to talk about on the movie
segment? All I'm saying is that Chris Rosen is now married.
Who?
Chris Rosen got married, and it was written up in the New York Times, of all places.
Oh, yeah? Is that right?
Yeah.
And?
Whoa, all right. We'll see if you get written up in the Queen's Weekly or whatever it is, the Queen's Free Reader.
The Historia Gazette may get a blast.
All right. Well, you don't want to talk about it? We don't have to talk about it.
No, I'll talk about whatever you want, Sam, but ask me a question. I'm here to be at your service.
All right. What's going on with your web series that you've been talking about so much? Is it up?
Yeah, the first 5 episodes are out. You know,
really?
they had shot 4 before I came on board, and we shot 6 more because thanks to all the people who donated to the Kickstarter, which I so egregiously promoted the last time we were on the show, got funded successfully, and so we shot 6 more, and they're starting to come out now. The Jim Gaffigan was in the first one, and that went down a storm, I think. I ran into Jim Gaffigan
coming back from Chicago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, from Detroit.
How'd that go?
Fine. He was sitting in, he sat in first class, and I sat in coach.
Oh.
There you go.
He's got like 2 million Twitter followers. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, I've got not 2 million Twitter followers.
Yeah. He was hilarious, though. He plays the nutritionist at the school. Each comedian comes in and plays a different teacher. You know, this is how...
Yeah,
Ed
I wouldn't
Alexander
know exactly that was the dynamic. I mean, should we address the elephant in the room?
What's that? Oh, that you haven't yet been asked to be in an episode?
It's pretty uncomfortable, I think, for everybody listening. I mean, how many people can I have on this program who are doing some type of comedy show and not have me on?
I know. Well, Sam, it's definitely come up in conversation, but I'm not in control of that. You know, I was hired to direct and to edit
that's
and to produce these, but...
That's sort of
I'm sorry,
worse,
you
though,
were hired to direct and to edit and to pimp the fundraising, but you have no say in any of the casting.
Not really, Sam. I got to say, I mean, I approved of all their decisions, let's say, but there's just only so much.
So
that,
they never
that
say
I
to you, "Hey, Matthew,
displace.
Who do you think should play this?" Or
no, that never came up.
Never came up.
No.
No.
Not really. Not in any meaningful way.
Not in a meaningful way. I see. Times, I see. So you...
You know, everyone who was in it donated their time. It was on a very catch-as-catch-can basis, and we had to switch some people out at the last minute and this and that. So,
oh, so you had multiple choices for different roles, is what you're saying. Is that it was
right.
Even the casting decisions weren't that important. It was just a question of who could show up that day.
Well, no, I wouldn't put it that strongly, but there were some negotiations about, like, each of the scripts were written with someone in mind.
Uh-huh.
And in one or two instances, very rarely did it have to go to somebody else. But all I'm saying is that.
Well,
all
I mean,
comes
it sounds like
top,
one or two instances would represent about 20% of the instances, at least. I mean, based upon what you've just
said.
Yeah,
you know, that's, you're better at math than me. Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. All right. Well.
But, you know, Mark Maron wasn't in one.
Well, you know, he doesn't live in this city. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
Oh, I did know that.
After you asked him to be in one and
he couldn't,
you said, I can't travel there?
Yeah, he couldn't make it.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the show that you're doing.
No, we didn't ask him. I'm kidding.
You'll recall, whatever. I'm not going to hold a grudge, Matthew.
And I'll tell you this, Sam, I certainly have applied a lot of the lessons that I've gleaned from watching you direct improv
comedy.
Well,
anything that I could do to help, short of something that would involve me being involved.
Exactly. You were as involved as possible without being involved. I'll put it that way.
Right. As involved as possible without gleaning any benefit from it.
Well, I mean, you hopefully you're proud of me that, you know, I've gone on to learn from you and just sort of follow in your footsteps a little bit. Doesn't that feel good?
Yeah, I think we call that plagiarism, I think is what we're talking about, right? I mean.
Well, I wouldn't put it directly there. It's not, I didn't steal word for word. Obviously, it's, you know.
You know, Matthew,
so you
when I
do.
Direct things, I decide who's going to be cast. Just FYI.
Right. Well, this was a more of a collaboration. You also wrote the scripts to your things, and I didn't have a hand in the writing of this. So, you know, you gotta divvy it up, in different ways.
Because we all know how much power the screenwriter has.
Well, you know, in this case, Ted and Hollis are the writers and the stars, so they do have quite a lot of say. And I'm not saying that they don't value your talent or your commitment to comedy, but. It just didn't manifest in the casting this time. But, you know, hopefully with the success of this run, we'll be doing it again. And, you know, you never know.
Wow, you sound a lot like Marin right now.
Right. Right. That's nice.
Yeah, you call
it. I have a pitch for your next show. It could be called Hollow Promises.
No, that could be maybe your show, like a one-man show.
Maybe it will be. Maybe it will be.
Yeah.
All right.
You know,
Matthew,
we actually,
great
you know,
talking
Janine,
to you today. Thank
we
you.
We had Janine do the voicing of the PA, too, so she had it more in than me. You know, she was there on the first four, so you can ask her.
Uh-huh.
We did actually have to replace her, though, so she was busy for this next five of the episodes.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
But don't worry. We got
them. So who else is in them? Jim Gaffigan.
Gaffigan, Dave Attell just came out. His is hilarious. I suggest everyone go check him out. Next up will be Michael Che, who's a new correspondent on The Daily Show, a hilarious up-and-coming comedian. He plays the talented and gifted program teacher.
Okay.
And then we've got Rachel Feinstein, another great comedian.
Don't know her.
Then your friend and mine, Todd Barry.
Okay, Todd, because he's such a great actor. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, well, you know. And also Jim Norton.
Ah, say hi to Jim Norton for me, Matt.
Jim Norton.
What's that?
Say hi to Jim Norton for me. He blocked me he blocked me on Twitter because I made an Anthony Cumia joke. It's pretty funny.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that's his bread and butter, you know. That's
it's already been shot, though. All right. What, so that's it. So
yeah,
Jim
it's been
Norton.
Shot.
So Jim Norton and not Sam Cedar.
All right.
Just to be clear.
Yeah, Jim Norton plays the security guard.
Oh, that's... Well,
so Jim Norton...
I mean, I got to say, I played a security guard in the Margaret Cho show.
He also played a cop.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I haven't been there, but
he has
whatever.
That's
all. You know, I see
just,
you...
Just
I
to
see
be clear again,
like,
Jim Norton, not Sam Cedar.
Let's talk about
Jim
your
Norton,
acting roles, Matthew. I seem to recall putting you in two of my projects, at least.
Yeah, well, yeah, you had total command of that, so you could fight for your vision. If and when one of those kind of projects materializes for me, you can believe that I will seriously consider you.
I appreciate that serious consideration.
Keep up the good work, young man. You've shown great promise. I'll be sure to consider you.
All right, and so where can people watch this product that is severely lacking my presence?
You can go to thundershorts.com, or you can go to YouTube and look for the Thunder Shorts channel. You know, they've also released several other, this new comedy channel also released several other web series, one with
Thunder
Michael
Shorts?
Showalter. Yeah, Thunder Shorts. It's the new, it's Snag Films, who were an online.
Wait, Thunder or Funder?
Thunder, like the rain and thunder.
Okay, Thunder Shorts. All right.
Yeah. They're an offshoot of Snag Films, who I understand distributes Who's the Caboose.
Do they?
What's that?
I'm not aware of that.
Yeah, you can watch Who's the Caboose on snagfilm.com.
I did not know that.
Great movie. It's a great movie.
Yeah. All right. Well, Matthew.
Please, check it out.
What do you have for us today in terms of watching a film or not a web series?
Right. Well, you know, with the mood of the world and the politics and the news going on these days, it kept making me think of one particular movie that I think is, if not an antidote, then sort of a good lightning rod for a lot of the different things going on between Gaza and Ukraine, you know, our own border cluster screw. And that is one of the greatest films ever made, and I'm not sure if we've ever talked about it before at all, but Rules of the Game by Jean Renoir.
Rules of the Game, do tell.
Yeah. I suggest everybody go out and see this movie who is getting nervous, who is getting agitated. This movie was created in 1939 in the shadow of World War II in France. And Renoir himself was a leftist Popular Front member who at the time they were clashing with the Nazis already in France. And he made this basically on the surface a comedy of manners, a sort of class comedy. You know, it's got kind of an upstairs, downstairs thing amongst this aristocracy, this group of aristocracy who retired to their villa in the country. And it's sort of that kind of comedy. But underneath it is this extremely deep and complex and not sort of essentializing, but you know, not sort of a cheapening of it, but a really great encapsulation of just what brings people to oppose each other. And one of the famous lines from it that the character in the movie says a couple times is, "The terrible thing about life is that everybody has his reasons." And this is a very sympathetic film. It takes the point of view of you know, the lowliest servant and the most pompous sort of aristocrat. There's a famous scene where they go hunting, and this was before the ASPCA or the, you know, animals were harmed in the making of this movie, but it's this devastating scene of slaughtering of these rabbits, and it just sticks with you. And apart from its sort of thematic greatness, it's just structurally, as a filmmaker, Sam, you would appreciate this, because it's got all of these relationship triangles, just the structure. It is just a masterpiece of structure. Different couplings. You know, it's that thing where A wants B, B wants C, but C doesn't want A, B doesn't want C. You know, it's like the classic Shakespearean or Chekhovian sort of love triangle, but there's like four of them, and they're all spinning concurrently, and it rewards repeat viewings because he also employed a very early use of deep focus. Everyone always praises Citizen Kane for its groundbreaking use of deep focus, but this was like 5 years before that, so there's all these wide shots where the actors are really running the show and the camera is sort of floating through. And it's just a masterpiece. And it was hated on its initial release. It is such a sort of scathing look into French society at the time that it was vilified. It was actually pulled from theaters. Someone tried to burn the theater down on one famous occasion. And it was re-edited until it was a shadow of its former self, only rediscovered in the 60s. And released in its full version to go on to become one of the greatest films, acknowledged as often one of the greatest films of all time.
Have you watched both versions of it and compared them?
No, I never actually have seen the early version. By the time I came to it in the 90s, the full version had been released. So I've only read about what was taken out. And you can understand it because it's not the kind of critical look at society that makes you go like tisk tisk and oh, that's not me. It sort of implicates everybody, and that's why I think that in this political climate, this movie came to my mind, because it is one that makes you look inside and ask, why do I take a side? Why do I have my sort of passions or arguments and, you know, that I defend? And the ending is not necessarily uplifting. It's almost like disappointed in humanity in a way, but I don't know. It has a sort of catharsis for me that every time I watch it, it's moving, and I find I leave it not feeling depressed, but sort of feeling, grounded again in just accepting, like, what life is, the turbulence, and so on.
This isn't going to be, like, one of those, like, Dana Milbank false equivalency things, is it?
False? I don't know. I recognize her name, but I don't know her particular article. What do you mean?
Her name. Forget it. It was just... It was just
that
was like a double joke. I also was just sort of trying to communicate just how myopic my life has become and one dimensional that I have to actually.
Right. No, I got that from the name check there, but you know, does it take one side or the other? No, it's a scathing insight into humanity and into the sort of the origins of all of these events. If not,
all right, I wasn't being really serious about that question. I can handle it. I mean, since it was,
I know, and I think you'll love it. I think it'll.
Now, I assume this is in French.
Yeah, it's in French. It's got subtitles though, so you don't have to speak French.
What do you say that we? It's got subtitles. What do we say we dub this baby?
I would love to dub this. That would be hilarious. It would ruin the movie, but it would be a fun exercise.
Right. Exactly. Maybe that could be your next project, and maybe you could involve somebody else in it. Maybe Todd Barry.
It's like a What's Up Tiger Lily kind of a thing.
Right.
We could, you know, change the story. Yeah.
All right. So the movie is Rules of the Game. And I love the fact that somebody tried to burn a theater down. I mean, I remember reading about all those Guy Debord. Situationist movies where people got just really, really pissed off at the films. And, you know,
you know, it strikes a nerve when that happens.
Yeah, we never had that in this country, did we? I mean, I seem to remember, like, when Warrior played back in the day, like in the 70s, that, you know, somebody got, like, beat up outside the theater. But I don't think it's the same
thing. I think the closest we have is, like, someone got shot during a Menace to Society screening.
Right. Well, Matthew, film guy, as always, I love this pick. I'm going to really try and watch it because I haven't seen
it. Yeah.
When I was traveling this week, I had the opportunity to see like a lot of like, you know, junky movies. I saw Captain America, Winter Soldier, and I actually liked that.
Really good movie.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that. Political overtones. You got to see... Robert Redford sort of in his condor mode a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Sneakers. All right. Matthew.
Enjoy, Sam. You'll love it.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. And now it is time. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song today?
We do.
We do. All right. What is the title of this song?
The title of the song is It Stops Today.
It Stops Today. So perhaps maybe Israel and Gaza.
Let's see. I have no idea.
Okay.
Today, this violence stops today. They choked Brother Garner out. Let us learn from this, I pray. Harassing black men is where it begins. Brother Garner, rest in peace, because now it must end today. I said today, let this violence stop today. Yeah. To all you NYC rich big city slickers, you bunch of Michael Bloomberg bootlickers with your fancy clothes and your mocha lattes, you thought stop and frisk would work out okay. New York City cops are inflicting the pain. You never see crap like that up here in Portland, Maine.
hell. We even legalized recreational Mary Jane. In New York, you can't even smoke medical. How insane. Today, I said today, we legalized marijuana today. Yeah. The police state is growing. It's scary, man. That's why my label's progressive libertarian. And violence is something that I most despise. And just look at that video with your own damn eyes. I said today, this violence stops today. They choked Brother Garner out. There's no way that crap is okay. Yeah. Harassing black men. Yeah, that's where it begins. Brother Garner, rest in peace, because now it must end. I said today, yeah. This violence must stop. This violence must stop today.
Now, I can't quite tell if Jimmy was just trying to fit in his usual marijuana references, but just to make it clear, Eric Garner, who was killed by the NYPD, he wasn't selling weed or drugs of any sort like that. He was just selling Lucy's, apparently.
Well, they accused him of selling loose cigarettes.
Just
loose
cigarettes.
Yes. Right, yeah. Which apparently is... enough of a violation that you want to put somebody in a chokehold.
Of course.
Nevertheless, the sentiment, definitely nice. Good job, Jimmy. Let's go. What do we got here? Let's hear. I want to hear this. I got this clip of, I haven't listened to it. It is
computer.
Chris Christie, Bullies Newark. And this is at a forum comprised mostly of Republicans. It was posted today. Let's just listen to this. Now, we all know with Newark, he would not provide the Sandy funds necessary, right? Let's listen to what he had to say here.
There's a new election for a new mayor of Newark. That mayor came in to talk to me about his agenda and said he wanted to speak to me about the educational system in Newark. And I said to him, listen, I'll listen to whatever you have to say, but the state runs the school system. I'm the decider, and you have nothing to do with it.
And you're reappointed.
Wow, good for Governor Christie. I love the idea that
dude is really just a big baby, really. Yeah. He really is. I'm the one with the power.
Well, and God forbid that a man who's a part of his primary professional experiences as being an educator would have any say over the direction of his city schools.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole fundamental premise of all of these things, is that the last people that you would consult to set policy are people that actually do this for a living.
Right.
It makes perfect sense. Does anybody go to the New Jersey State Teacher of the Year and say, why do you think Samsung is having a problem with its market capitalization?
Right.
You should really help develop a strategy for that. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. All right, let's go. What else do we have in terms of well, we don't have much in terms of sound. Let's go. We're going to do a Freebie Friday today?
Yeah, we're already.
All right, Freebie Friday.
We'll do Random Rush, or we do have two pieces.
Oh, yeah,
of sound.
We haven't done a Random
Rush
in a long
time.
Yeah,
instead of the sound, if we don't have time for everything.
Yeah, I'm not loving the...
The sound's not so great.
Sound's a little weak today. All right, hold on one second here. All right, bear with me one second, folks.
Who can run around?
Okay. It's time for Random Rush. You know what that means? I listen to Rush Limbaugh randomly for 60 seconds, and I respond to him in 90. And it is now 1:12, almost 1:13 p.m. East Coast time. Here we go.
For three games and made him go to sensitivity training. And it was in that story that I read a comment from this professor at USC who teaches some obscure course about gays and lesbians in Hollywood. It's not the history of gays and lesbians, and it's not that something even screwier. It's not something that you would pay USC 14 or 20 grand to send your kids to learn. It was crazy. I wish I could find it.
What just happened?
We just lost him.
Oh, shoot. He just went off the air. He was so stupid, he went off the air. All right, well, let's bag it, because I have no idea what he was talking about. It was only 30 seconds. What just happened? That station just went down.
Get into some other things.
Okay, let's try it again. All right, it's time for Random Rush. You know what that means? I listen to Rush Limbaugh for 60 seconds, and I respond in 90. It is now 1:14 p.m. East Coast time.
Francisco 49ers, who does not have a player who beat up his fiancée or wife on the roster, as far as we know. And the head coach held a press conference, and this is what he said about the two-game suspension that running back Ray Rice got for hitting and knocking out his then-fiancée, Janae is her name.
There are consequences when you make a mistake like that. I stand behind Ray. He's a heck of a guy. He's done everything right since. He makes a mistake, all right? He's going to have to pay a consequence. I think that's good for kids to understand that it works that way. That's how it works. That's how it should be. The next guy will have to step up, and then Ray will be back, you know, when the time comes.
Right. Ray will be back after two games. And so that's that. Now we go to the Vikings, where the assistant coach is Mike Pryfer, special teams coordinator. And Mike Pryfer has been given three.
Right, let's bag this. I don't even know what the.
Oh, you don't know what he's talking about?
No.
Okay, basically this NFL guy, Ray Rice, was caught on tape basically beating the shit out of his wife or girlfriend, whatever she is. And he knocked her unconscious. And this was on security footage. And the NFL suspended him for two games.
Yeah,
whereas this other guy, I forgot who, was caught with weed or something, and he got suspended for like 14 games.
Well, where are the police in this?
And the NFL had whatever team he plays for had, and the NFL backed him up completely, had him come out with his significant other and their child or whatever sitting in the front row, and they basically had him apologize and her apologize for causing this mess too.
Wait a second. She apologized for...
She apologized basically for this whole hubbub with her getting punched in the face and knocked out. Basically because, you know, what she's supposed to do, I guess, you know?
Oh, my God.
We'll cover that
And then
more.
He was bringing up the...
Two games. That's quite a...
we'll
that
cover
is
that
quite,
more on Monday. I'm just catching up on
that
this
That is quite a price to pay for knocking...
he literally knocked her unconscious. Yeah.
A woman unconscious. My gosh. Two whole games? Well, that's over the course of 8 days almost. Oh, my God. That is really, you're teaching kids a very good lesson.
And then he was
If you knock out a person or a woman twice, then you'll be suspended for four games. We do it two games per knockout of a woman. Unbelievable.
And then he was bringing up the Vikings coach who, if you remember, Chris Clue, I believe his name is.
Right.
The guy who was originally on the Vikings. Then he wrote that article saying they didn't re-sign him or rehire him because his activism in the LGBT community. And then he in the article he wrote, he spoke specifically of this horrible, homophobic, anti-gay rant that the Vikings coach went on or something like that, and where he called for like gay people to be killed or something like that. And it turns out after an investigation by the team itself, they've determined it's true. He actually did say this. Mm. And they're giving him some sort of slap on the wrist.
Right. Of course.
And he was probably tying it into the fact that just recently, I forgot which sports pundit or whatever, went on to say that Michael Sam will be just as much of a distraction as Michael Vick was. And that's why Michael Sam is no good.
Right. So now Michael Vick was a distraction because...
Because he's the guy who had the dog fighting ring?
Right. So I see. Dog fighting, being gay. both very problematic for society. Unbelievable. All right, let's go to the IMs. Who's the boff? I was thinking yesterday during yesterday's interview that the Majority Report is really great at getting into the weeds, and I found myself imagining a Jimmy Reefer Cake song using Into the Weeds as a clever metaphor in a musical homage to the show. Please, Jimmy, make it so. Milton Apathy, guess what? Another F-tard poll where the media hacks don't put plurality into context. One-third say impeach Obama. Rice knocked her out and then drug her caveman style into the elevator. She did a classic move and married him. Oh, God. God. Well, I mean, imagine if there was no video, right? And it was just a report. I mean, imagine there was no video and she just reported him. He probably wouldn't get any type of suspension. Right? I mean, the reason why they got to suspend the guy is only because other people can see the level of brutality. Otherwise, they wouldn't do anything, probably.
I always found it fascinating that with O.J. Simpson that, I mean, obviously there's a lot of racial subtext to that whole story, but people immediately went to that, and no one ever looked at the indictment of the game of football in the NFL. I mean, until that actual thing happened, people ignored years of him engaging in serious abusive women. And that never interfered with endorsement deals or anything.
Let's go to Carl Sagan. Just curious if you ever made it to the old Miami bar when you were in Detroit. Did you leave your hotel at all, Sam, or just enjoy hours of uninterrupted sleep while being apart from your family? I never made it to the old Miami bar. I'm mad at Charlie Pierce for not taking me there. I went out a decent amount, but not as much. I was tired. Yeah, I mean, I was still sort of catching up from loss of sleep on the dual show days. Ian, I have to disagree with the assertion either Matt or Mike made, eating vegan is expensive. It very much isn't. Animal products are some of the most expensive items people eat. Meat and dairy prices have been going up faster than grains and fruits and vegetables for a while now. Getting enough protein is not a serious concern. Most vegetables contain a fair amount of protein, and grain and legumes contain a ton. This doesn't make what PETA did any less offensive, though, because the problem Detroit has is food deserts. Counter to popular perception, food deserts aren't full of cheap food. They're full of overpriced, shitty food. The idea that McDonald's is cheap isn't really accurate. It's less expensive than a lot of restaurants, but eating a meal there is still more expensive than getting food at a grocery store.
You're not calculating
lack of access to food, as your comment about bodegas correctly implied, is what makes eating vegan in poor parts of Detroit difficult.
You're not calculating the time it takes to prepare food and how these people are usually working in jobs where they don't have time to go to the grocery stores, come home and prepare food for their family and their kids and themselves. It's easier and more cost efficient for them just to go to McDonald's or something like that. Being vegan is expensive. I don't care what anyone says. It's true.
All right. That's what listen to Matt.
It's been covered before. I could pull up articles and such that was
all right. Well, let's leave this for Monday. Majority Report Zach. Hey, Matt, has there been any more fallout from your MRA debate the other week? Are they agitating against stop and frisk yet?
The weirdest thing is that usually these guys go on and on about these things when they feel like they won. And apparently it's just been utter silence. And people who follow the MRA world forums and blogosphere were telling me how they were pretty shocked. They were completely ignoring it.
Matt Marr, article in Washington Monthly titled "The Big Lobotomy" describes a brain drain in D.C. congressional committees and the takeover institutional memory by K Street. Long story short, we're effed. Yeah, interesting. That's an interesting dynamic. That makes total sense. The genius says, I agree with the PR department leaves much diplomacy to be desired. However, perhaps being outraged by PETA's offer to help these waterless folks when almost no one else has, others will finally come forward and make a proposal more palatable to the inhumane bystander. Well, yesterday I announced that there was already, not just the Water Brigade, but it was the... did we put it on the blog? Didn't you post it on the blog yesterday when I announced it? No, that was a mistake. We'll put it on the blog. But there are people who are doing it. And apparently there's also an Amazon registry I think you can go to. There's both where you can supply stuff. I mean, I agree with you. Somebody else should do. And, I think you're mischaracterizing, outrage is a little strong. They're a nonprofit with a particular mandate that funders expect their donations to go toward. Yes, saving animals. I get it. But to leverage that, I think, is just wrong. You left out the fact that PETA is also giving them vegan food, but they should have known the potential reaction, done nothing for Detroiters like everyone else. Well, I mean, I think that they could have also just done something for Detroiters instead of putting stipulations on it. I mean, if that was their goal. I mean, look, let's put it this way. All right? This was obviously a PR stunt by them. And it was just a very bad PR stunt. I don't think anybody can deny that. Also, as our family has been vegan for 20 years and we are not rich, we grow much of our own food and save money for not buying dead animals prior to the eats. We have fewer medical bills. Ask someone who actually knows the economics of veganism, like your billionaire vegan buddies, Jamie and Allison. They're almost as poor as me, and they dislike PETA PR for being sexist. Not to mention it helps the planet.
Again, where are you going to grow your food in an urban setting? I mean, I don't understand. Again, this is coming from privilege here. You live in probably a more rural or even suburban area, and you're growing your own food.
Matt is outraged as he slams down his big gulp and his Big Mac that he is greedily chowing on. He responds in indignation.
Yeah, because it's shaming people who can't afford to eat healthy.
All right. By law, PETA cannot spend their money. I know. I just think it's a bad PR move. That's all. They can't spend their member donations on just anything. It has to be related to their stated mandate or risk being charged with misappropriation of funds. Could be applauded that they could even clever enough to think that the way that they could help folks in Detroit is voluntary and 10 families involved. Detroit has urban gardens, he says. Actually, there's a grotesque amount of empty land there. People are talking about that a little bit. The Viper. I have a theory that great political leaders seldomly make great parents. Their kid is brought up with everyone telling how great their parent is, becomes extremely resentful, and makes their goal to upstage their father by reaching the higher political office or by achieving a goal like killing Saddam Hussein. They have no ideology, only ambition. Be More 66. Wow, you guys called me out. Please don't. About this endeavor. I'm tending start August the same. Wow. Thank you, Be More 66.
You got to read
going
that.
He said not to read it.
So how are we supposed to know? How is anyone's? Why even say thank you?
All right. No, thank you.
That was great.
Kev, man, while you've covered most of the big stories this Newsweek, there's one bombshell story you've left all through the cracks. Here it is. Ben Stein is caught up in a sexting scandal. I read this story a while back. I haven't seen the most recent one, but it is apparently Ben Stein has this habit of approaching all I've read is the article that Ben Stein wrote. Like, he has this column now. And apparently Ben Stein knew that he was caught in the scandal and started writing sort of like almost retro-scripting what happened. And it's for him to tell it, he basically has this thing where he's like he's a nice old man, and he approaches very attractive young women and sort of befriends them, and then they take advantage of him a little bit by asking him for money and stuff like that. And he seems to like find women, or I'm not, according to him, he seems to find women and approach women and talk to them. And his wife knows all about this, apparently, of his habit. And then he gets sort of like, he exchanges texts with them all the time, and then they want him to take care of them by giving them money to like get apartments and stuff. It's really just
it sounds very Republican.
It's
extremely trickle down, private sector charity. and sort of informal markets at work.
It's really disturbing.
It's literally one of the most nauseating things I've ever seen in my life.
This latest one, he was like apparently harassing this pregnant woman that he wanted to touch her because she was pregnant or something.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. Yeah, you want me to read the text?
I really don't.
Yes, do it.
Please don't.
Okay. Only because I'm enjoying Michael's reaction so much.
Oh, my God. I already feel a little queasy.
You're all right. You'll be all right. Everybody will be all right. Okay, Ben. Where are you? Please send more sexy pics. Again, where are you? You have a lot on your plate, really a lot. Single mother, little money, very young, father absent. But you are a brave and brilliant woman. This is what he writes, how much do you need? And she writes, I'm so thankful you're asking. You've been incredibly helpful. If you could send me $500, that would put me in a safe and comfortable spot as I finish up when I return home. That is too much for one check, even for such a charmer as you. And then he sends it into his account. We don't know how much. Money is an account, he writes. Thank you very much. You're welcome, of course. When you get here, I want to hug and kiss you. I understand you don't want to F me. But I want to touch you and kiss you. This is really not, I'm not enjoying this now.
Are you getting queasy as well? Are you feeling the feeling I'm
If that
feeling?
Does not suit you, please let me know. Kindly respond.
50 Shades of Cedar.
Ben, you may hug me and feel my baby burrow. A bump. My baby bump?
She's pregnant.
Anything more is too much for me. I'm not your girlfriend. Can't we simply enjoy a conversation and a meal? I'm pregnant. I used to be very protective of. I need to be very protective of my body. Ben writes.
You're goddamn right.
Oh gosh. I
read this little one coming up though.
Your note hurts my feelings. Insulting. Shows zero appreciation. Probably better if I don't see you. I wish you well and great success in your future life. I'm sorry you feel insulted. My note was about me, not you. I didn't say anything about you. I just thought you'd appreciate a concise, honest answer about my feelings. Your feelings are the problem, Ben says. All right, I'm not going to.
Oh, my God.
All right.
My feelings involve not being harassed by the teacher in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Those are...
That's really nauseating.
It really is.
I didn't need to know.
Let's have a palate cleanser. We'll go to the phone. You call him from a 618 area code. Who's this?
Yeah, my name's Jason.
I'm sorry. Will you back off your phone a little bit? You there?
Better?
No. It sounds really distorted.
That's unfortunate because I'm a Fort farmer from a privileged rural area of the country, and I'd love to.
Can you back off a little bit? Get a further away from your microphone.
About what Matt was saying. But
can you get further away from your microphone?
All right, man. I appreciate what you guys are doing. I'll try calling back sometime.
Okay, I can't. I just couldn't understand what he was saying. All right, we got a lot of IMs here. Boy, that's horrible. Ode to the Maddox. Here's a rewrite of the poem at the Statue of Liberty by someone named a right winger. Keep ancient lands, your storied pomp, warns a she with pursed lips. Keep them, you're lazy, you're poor, you're infested invaders, yearning to take our air, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, send them from me. I douse the lamp beside my locked door. Indeed. NK, listening through the app, was watching through the app, but the feed kept blurring. Trying the IM feature. Thanks for starting 14 minutes late with Cliff today. What? Perfect timing for me as I just walked through the door. It wasn't 14 minutes late. It was about 10 minutes late. 5 minutes late. Cliff was a little late. Do not know if you're online, if my message came through. Okay, have an awesome weekend, boys. Dr. Radman Thies, hi, Sam. Some of your comments in the past have made me wonder, how much control do you think the U.S. has over NATO? Say on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being no control and 10 being absolute control. Do you think NATO should be taken seriously as an entity independent of the U.S.? I would say 7? 8? That would be my guess. 7 or 8. How much control do you think the United States has over its sanctions on Russia? How much control do you think the U.S. government has? Because the sanctions have been more or less anemic. And mostly that's because of U.S. business interests, including Exxon.
Well, and the power that Russia has over European energy supply.
No, but I'm talking about
even
U.S.
ours,
sanctions.
Ours, I mean, direct. Look, oh,
here's the
point. Through lobbying here.
The United States, yes. But the point is, United States has the ability to present unilateral sanctions. But so far, they've been anemic. I don't understand how this is consistent with the theories that people are propagating. Now, I have no doubt that there are people who see Putin and Russia as the paramount force that we should be undermining. I have no doubt that there are not neocons who are putting money into Ukraine like they do with a lot of different countries around the world in terms of these, like, you know, democracy initiatives. They had one in Iraq, but that was not the primary driver of the conflict there.
I'm also confused. I mean, Russia is open for business. I think Russia is one of the top foreign direct investments countries in the world. There's partnerships between Exxon and Gazprom. Like, I don't. It seems like every time one of these issues comes up, there's this sort of like, oh, Russia's, you know, fighting some imperialist forces. But Russia, through their energy markets and through their capital markets, are totally integrated into the global economic system. I don't – and again, that's exactly why you have firms that Russia hires like Ketchum that Li Fang wrote about that lobby very well and very effectively in the United States on behalf of energy interests to not really have serious sanctions.
Yeah, I just don't know. I'm not sure I follow what the agenda here is. I mean, that's the thing, is that, yes, I have no doubt that there are people, but I mean, I don't even think that we have vital interest there aside from the deal we made. Was it 93 or 95 or whatnot, that we would provide protection for former Soviet states based upon their allowing for the international community to come in and get loose nukes. So beyond that, which, yes, I think is a pretty good deal. And beyond that, yes, I think NATO has been, is interested in expansion. But we also have the missile systems that were pulled from, I just don't get it. I mean, is there a story there? I can find a story about anything. But in terms of just like the relevance, I don't understand what people are suggesting. That, I mean, I don't see the United States actually like sort of working that hard to prevent Russia, or being able to do that much to prevent Russia from, let's say, invading Ukraine or from continuing to destabilize it. Just the fact that, look, if it is the case that whatever the conspiracy theory that somehow neocons funded the Ukraine government to shoot down this plane as a way of leveraging against Russia from going in. What could be better proof that there is no leverage? I just don't understand it. I don't understand what the argument is here. Just, I mean, aside from wanting me to believe that Putin is somehow the victim in this situation. I don't understand it. Egreg, the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan was a country built by the international community. It's majority Palestinian, yet was able to sign a genuine peace agreement with Israel in the 90s because it is a government that's able and willing to enforce it. Palestinians in Jordan have it way better than those living in Gaza. Actually, North Koreans under the Kims probably have it better than Gazans. So we can do it in Jordan, but not in Gaza because Israel, right? Oh, and maybe Egypt a little bit. I don't get. I also don't get your point.
It also,
I don't know what you're. I don't know you're. I don't know what you're presenting. I don't understand what you're arguing.
And a lot
we should go in, and the entire world should invade Gaza. We know that there is a 3-to-1 ratio of militants killed to civilians killed in Gaza at this point. Tell me how many civilian lives you're willing to pay to liberate them. Pammy Hammy, what did you guys think of Philip Murawski mentioning geoengineering as part of the neoliberal agenda? David Keith is the Harvard guy that wants to put sulfuric acid into the atmosphere. Still eye-rolling, or is there something already happening? I have not followed up on that. But the idea is that there's always a market a solution. In fact, Paul Ryan's poverty plan, right, is all built on the real reason why people are poor is because they're not incentivized to not be poor. The implication, of course, that it's just so easy to be poor these days. Trip, Matt Rules of the Game, excellent choice. Geophone, Sam, Israel-Palestine, I don't think wishful thinkers go far enough back. If we're engaging in wishful thinking, let's begin with the Romans hadn't destroyed the temple and depopulated Israel to begin with. I think there's a good point there. First of all, the reason why we have to deal with all this rabbinic Judaism is because the Romans destroyed the temple. And we probably wouldn't even had to have dealt with, you know, Christianity. We could have probably stopped the pedophilia because it is unlikely that Christians would have had priests had we not had the Romans kick the Jews out of Jerusalem in the old temple. And therefore, reestablishing rabbinical Judaism in Yavna in 61 B.C., or I should say or C.E., the priests still would have been predominant. And therefore, you would have never had probably the Christian religion promoting priests. They would have been called something else. And maybe we would have been less, the term would have been less loaded. People wouldn't have deferred to them, and there wouldn't be, you know, pedophilia. I mean, honestly, yes, that's the point, is that, you know, everybody sort of like, everybody involved in this conflict on both sides tried to sort of unravel the original sin. And they all have their own version of what the original sin is. Now, when we talk about there existing a Palestinian society in what the British mandated to the Jews, I think that's important to recognize because it was a fact. It was a fact. But to say that there should be no Israel now because of that, or to say that, you know, the Arabs attacked Israel in 1948, these things are not operative anymore. We are so far past that. And all it does is it becomes an excuse not to create a sustainable peace in that region. That's all it functions for. It is the last refuge of people who simply, in some fashion or another, want to justify the elimination of the other. That's it. Disturbing new trend. Wicked good job, Jimmy Reefer Cake. Ebonara. That Jimmy Reefer Cake song was more inspiring than I anticipated. Kudos to BBC World Service NewsHour radio program for practicing real journalism. Yesterday, the program Israeli spokesperson Mark Regev claimed that UN officials themselves condemned Hamas for storing weapons in the UNRWA school Israel shelled. Today, after demanding Regev provide proof that UN officials had said the propaganda line Regev had claimed, Regev was forced to admit the source of his dramatic civilian death justifying claim was a tweet by a UN official mentioning reports existing that there might have been stored weapons there. Thanks for BBC NewsHour. Yeah, I mean, it is, I just, you know, I saw an exchange on the McNeil-Lehrer report. And they had a Palestinian representative and a former Israeli official on. Both, I think, are professors, actually, at this point. And the former Israeli, what are you doing? It's distracting. The former Israeli official, you know, kept using this thing about civilians, you know, civilian shields and whatnot. And there's no evidence of it. There's no evidence of it. There's reports that Hamas stored weaponry in a vacant UN school. UN makes it clear to the Israelis who's where and what. And when they bombed that school that killed 15 people, the UN had made it clear to the Israelis who was there, and they claim that they were not allowed to even leave. Yes, no, it's true that the weapons were stored there, but it was not a functioning school. It was just a building. The issue isn't whether or not it's a school or the, and the Israelis certainly knew that because the UN reports on all these things to the Israelis. Ebonar, Ben Stein desires to live as a pornographic version of a Dixanian benefactor. Yes. Dead guy Chuck. This is too big. Bad news on the Quaker front. George Fox University Evangelical College has refused to allow a trans man to live in the men's dorm on campus. Instead, they've ostracized him by giving an apartment off campus. I've sent a tweet to Majority FM, a petition started by his mother. If you could, please retweet it and post on the blog. That'll be awesome. Yeah, we'll retweet that. Bush and Chains, F you, Obama, Snoop Lion, smoking ganj in the White House, Rastafari. Jay-Z, they were cousins, but if you banned the next generation of a family from running for office, wouldn't you need to have robbed the world of FDR? How many Bushes? No, cousins okay. Cousins fine. Shank Steele, if the spawn of politicians always do worse, let me say Palin. And what about Bachman? Didn't her Todd have like 29 kids? We're screwed. New reality show. Win Ben Stein's money, honeys. A Square, MR Casual Fridays can't end the week without it. And Jimmy, the lyrical in you continues to flourish. Bloomberg bootleggers love it. Michael, your Bloomberg impression now challenging right-wing Mandela. Sam, you forgot the Rule of Jabril comment. Yeah, I'm guessing I'm going to have to get it. The Detroit Water Project. Yeah, there was a specific website, though. I can't remember what it was. Jay Tingle, this has been a great transmission. I have been in a thrall. I am too engrossed. I'm not going to withhold my support this month. Michael sounds pretty relaxed today. Your new policy of letting him have just one drink before the show seems to be working. Dixanian? Did the guy write?
Dickensian.
Dickensian. Yeah, I thought it was like a Nixon comment. The Vikings coach he was talking about got suspended in sensitivity training for calling players. The coach got 3 games. Slater Lee, guys, you missed Rush Limbaugh was doing. You cut Rush off just as he said Mike Preffer was suspended for 3 games for his homophobic comments. Okay. Scott Ricketts, Rice's fiance married him so she couldn't be forced to testify against him. Sam, if you let Greg from yesterday Monday back on, I'm going to resign my Cedarista membership. Quo Vadimus, Sam, did you hear about the little boy who was selling a box of newborn kittens labeled Republican kittens? The businessman thought this was the cutest thing ever. He went home and got his wife saying, you have to see this. This is adorable. The next day they got back and the box of kittens was now labeled Progressive Kittens. The man said, what's the deal? Yesterday you had them labeled Republican kittens. And the boy said, yes, but now their eyes are open. Oh, that's cute. Dolink, thought you'd be on Stephanie Miller's show yesterday. What? I never heard that. Did she announce I was going to be on? Imo Prods, any idea why the NFL has tax-exempt status? No, I wasn't even aware of that. Mr. 100, all right, you know what time it is. Random Rush, that game where we listen to Rush Limbaugh for 60 seconds and Matt responds in 5 minutes. Just kidding. Kami Canuck, ditto for me on the vegan issue. It's not expensive and doesn't have to be complicated. A PETA move was still dumb and rude. Matt, agreed that shaming is not the way to go to encourage people to change their eating habits, but that doesn't mean that beans and grains are pricey. I don't know why anyone professes to like seitan. It's not a requirement for veganism.
Beans and rice sound like a full meal to last someone for very long.
You have hit Matt where he lives. That's all I can say. Politics is very personal.
Besides those basics, though, when it comes to Matt's, it's too expensive.
That's not true.
Yeah, you're really, you are honestly seriously overstating it.
What's the cheapest you can feed a family with at McDonald's?
Cheapest you can feed a family with?
Yeah, 4 people.
Probably, I don't know. 4 people?
Well, I mean, you're making this argument, so you have a sense of like what does a burger have and like a burger.
Right, you could probably feed each person with like $3 or $4.
$4 each, okay, with a burger, right?
Yeah.
They get fries too,
yeah,
or no?
Yes.
Okay, so $4. So four people, $16. For $16, you could buy two cans of beans, which would cost you, depending on what kind of beans you get, probably maybe $2 to $4. You want organic beans, may cost you $5, depending on where you are. Your rice is going to cost you $1 to feed four people. Now you have $9. If you want, you get a couple of bell peppers, maybe a couple of onions. You stir it up, you stir fry it, you put it in, there's a meal. It's not a great meal, but the one you're talking about.
You're also not like literally committing food-assisted suicide.
But it's a very healthy one. It certainly has all the protein you need. It certainly has all the calories you need. I mean, that's – I mean, for me, I like I eat meat. I don't – you know, but we do, you know, meatless Mondays and –
Can I just share a funny moment in PETA tastelessness?
Yes.
Okay, so from – I remember,
it's absolutely necessary.
It's not absolutely necessary. Okay, several years ago, during the Second Intifada, some group – I don't remember which one, but basically they strapped explosives on a camel and used a camel to attack an IDF unit or something like that. I don't remember the specifics, but I remember – PETA sent a letter to Arafat, even though obviously he wasn't responsible for this, and basically just said, we're making no comment about any single aspect of this conflict except for, please don't use camels in suicide attacks, which was, you know, I don't know if it was tasteless, but it was just they don't necessarily have the broadest view of things.
Right. Jimmy Reefercake, I wanted to call in to talk about the relation of violence and how marijuana legalization would ease the situation. Garner was tired of being arrested. He had been arrested 30 times. One of those was marijuana possession. I mean, I think there is a point in that regard, in that, you know, but I think they were just harassing this guy. And the Lucy's was an excuse. Mud 1126. Hey, Sam, the sad part about Detroit's water problem is that it's statewide. Here in Flint, Genesee County is the highest in the state, yet we're surrounded by the most fresh water in the world. Welcome to America. Tam Folger. It's wrong to shut off water on many levels, but why haven't the big money owners like Joe Louis Arena and big local university had theirs turned off? Yes, Matt, vegan vegetarian is expensive. That's a good question. I don't know why those major businesses have not. And Dove, you're right about PETA's classist demands on suffering Detroitans. However, Binder's assertion about lack of farmland in Detroit is a little off. Too lazy to link, but there's a ton of press about various community groups and nonprofits starting local farms. Yeah, I mean, it's not, I think it's not a solution yet. Let's put it that way. Rypop Phil, I will say there are hydroponics that can be set up indoors in an urban setting that would be good for most families, as elements are inexpensive, but it takes training, indeed. Another issue, Sam, I can't confirm, but it's been suggested Ukraine Air Force shadowed commercial flights. I didn't buy into it, but you wonder. I don't know about that. It's not inconceivable. When the U.S. shot down that that airliner, my understanding is that there was an Iranian jet that was shadowing it, and it was, or flying underneath it, and that it literally was. That's what the thing locked onto, and then as soon as they saw that the missile was fired, they scooted out of the way. So that's not inconceivable. I don't know that this was the strategy. I mean, it was clearly a mistake, obviously, and by somebody, because I don't know what benefit. I really don't see the big benefit that the Ukrainians would gain by shooting down this this commercial airliner. And to the extent that they thought it would somehow put pressure on Putin to back off, they were wrong.
No one.
It's gone the other way.
Actually, in fact, the only people that have suggested that it was an intentional targeting of an airliner are people with conspiracy theories about the Ukrainian government.
Well,
like,
that's
I
my
mean,
point.
I'm saying no one who's saying what the conventional, like the narrative that seems most obvious, that these were rebels who did it, no one's saying that they tried to do it on purpose.
Right. And Tam Polger says that they're in Detroit and much of the land to be farmed has been poisoned, which also would not surprise me. I imagine it's a big, super fun cleanup site there. Bingo Mosquito, that was almost enough to get me to give up sexting to get altogether. Almost. Woot, do you think much can be won by Europe imposing trade sanctions on Russia? I don't know. I don't know.
They need a real alternative energy strategy in order to really do that.
Muggity T. Jones, looking for something to watch. HBO's new documentary, Newberg Sting. It was one of the best documentaries I've seen. I've never heard of that. I will check it out. Monkey versus Jesus. Sounds like a variation on a family's typical meal. Use dried beans and you save another $3 or $4 off the meal. Yeah, dried beans, that is a big production. Canned beans, you can get from anywhere from like, I don't know, Goya's probably run like around $1. And then you can go up to like organic, and it'll be, I've seen them as high as $2.50 sometimes. Final IM of the week. Man, this whole week has been just so contentious. Matt pissed about veganism, the Ukrainian stuff. We've gotten so many emails on Ukrainian stuff. The Israel, this is like a very testy period. It's summer. Maybe it's summer. And I'm also getting very agitated. Like I see like these reports on, I think it was on PBS last night where they were talking about like, it seems that it's possible that the those people coming seeking asylum have gotten the message from deportations. No, you effing idiots. It's summer. It's summer. Ask any immigration official. Go look at the... I'm sure there is data that shows that the two quietest months on the border will be July and August. And then I would guess it's June and then maybe September or May. There's no doubt in my mind. And I think I'm getting that mad about it because I'm just agitated. Finding it agitating.
It is really stupid.
All right. The final. Oh, wait a second. Matt is correct about vegan prices, Sam. And there's a huge difference between meatless Mondays and literally eating beans every day. I agree. You could have tofu. Look, I can't do it. I guess there's tofu and then, if you have a little bit of it, and kale chips.
When I say it's expensive, I'm not just talking monetary. I'm talking the time.
We got to wrap it up.
The education, the transportation, and all that stuff you need.
The education, transportation.
You need to go to the grocery store.
Okay.
You need to be able to bring home all the stuff you buy.
That's true. You can. Get a bodega. That is true for particularly in the context of Detroit. There are places where you probably can't even get fresh vegetables. I mean,
I'm sure
you got a McDonald's on every corner practically, right. And then you got to go out of your way to find a grocery store that sells the organic stuff that you want.
Talk about who might be secretly getting money under the table to promote products on this show.
Yeah, no
always
kidding.
Pointing the finger at me.
Yeah. All right, the final IM of the week.
Very
deserved. Borat. In my country, we eat bats. My wife can give you recipe. All right, folks. See you, Matt and Mike, on Monday. I'll be back Tuesday. See you then. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice was made, for the option.
option where you don't get paid.